This is the May 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of AgReview. She's in Morton, Illinois. Greg Johnson joins us from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com out of Champaign, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is here from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at WILLAG.org. Sometimes I like to get a list of things that maybe we should discuss for the day to see what you all are thinking about. Ellen Dearden from AgReview, I think I'll start with you. What's on your list today?
Well, I'm curious whether the market already has dialed in the weather delays that we've just seen for planting, and whether this pattern change that looks to be coming up is going to be a market mover.
Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing.
Well, I think we've talked about Ukraine for a while, but I don't think we can talk about it enough. They are a big producer of corn, and the estimates as to how much of their acreage they are going to get planted and how much of that will translate into actual production and how much of that will translate into actual exports, I think is something worth talking about.
And Mike Zuzulo on your list.
Now, the only thing I can think of, Todd, is the COVID lockdowns in China seem to be really having some demand destruction effects, and probably worth talking about to the listeners out there and whether this is going to impact us more severely than maybe we had thought as we head into the middle part of the year.
Let's start out with the weather delays just a bit and get an idea of how far along everybody thinks farmers are in their regional areas. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden, in the Peoria area along the Illinois River. How far along are folks?
Oh, anywhere from zero to half the soybeans are planted and very little corn.
Greg Johnson in East Central Illinois?
Same thing, 0 to 50%, but I'd say on average probably 20% of the beans and 15% of the corn. More beans than corn. Maybe that's surprising a little bit, but I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised by that. But more beans and corn, probably 20% beans, 15% corn.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Well, kind of a different story out here, Todd, especially in the Kansas, Nebraska states and south into Oklahoma. I think maybe Missouri is more like what Ellen and Greg are talking about. But I think a lot of the clients I work with in Kansas and Nebraska especially are probably close to 50, some 100% done in corn, soybeans probably around 25 to 50% done. So they really turned up the wheels on the corn this past week, and talked to a fellow out by Grand Island, Nebraska that I work with, and he said it's pretty much all done all the way up to west of Grand Island, which, these are the droughty areas that we're talking about.
Are they still dry?
They've gotten some relief. And, in this part of the country, an inch and a half to 2 inches of rain this time of year is kind of like a 3 or 4 inch rain back in central Illinois. So it is a huge rain to keep the plants viable as we head into the early summer. Doesn't mean we're going to have big yields. No, but we're not looking at dusting in something that never emerges either. So I'd say we have on tap right now, with the weather pattern shift and above average crop being grown at this early stage.
Ellen Dearden, you asked the question, but do you have an answer for it? Has the market dialed in the weather delays that have been put in place already?
I think we have talked enough about the weather delays for a long enough time that the current prices probably have that dialed in. I did read a weather comment on Thursday, and the guy said that he thought that with the weather, the shift in the weather, that 60% of the corn crop may be planted next week. And by the time we get to the 16th weekly crop update, that would be reflected. That would be a huge amount of corn going in the ground.
Greg Johnson, you think that producers can move that quickly? I know we talked about it during the cash grain segment on Wednesday of this week.
Yeah, I think the farmers are ramped up. They're ready to go, chomping at the bit. And I think with the bigger equipment and the preparedness that they've had time to get ready for, yeah, I think we can get a lot of corn planted. And I was just looking, December corn futures, I think, closed somewhere around 738, and the contract high this year, 757. So we're only 19 cents off of contract highs, and we haven't sold off very much. So if we do get a lot of corn planted next week, it would not be surprising to me to see corn go down 25, 35 cents. But I guess long term, I still think there's room. You know, we've got the whole growing season to go. Mike and his area out there alluded to the dryness, and, you know, dry weather is great to get the crop planted, but we're going to need rain in July and August. And I think the jury's still out on that. So until we get the answer to that, I guess I'm still more friendly corn than rather than wanting to sell it on where it is today.
I'd like to pull all of you, and Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with you. Should producers, when they put the crop in the ground, some of them will wait to this time, with the high price of new crop corn, be at some level of sold, whether that's from previous sales through the winter months until now, or making catch-up sales, and at what level should that be?
Yeah, I mean, I can't get into specifics. I just had my annual compliance audit, and, you know, this is one of the things that they get really sticky about is talking specifics, Todd. So I'd love to talk to you one-on-one, but I really would just say, generally speaking, these are prices to hedge. We are in mid-May. We have a major crop report coming next week, and I think Greg and Ellen's points are spot on. We had the Federal Reserve this week. We have a lot of information now in the market. We're seeing the stock market roll over more in a serious manner because of the demand side of the equation. What I'm getting at is this market has proven to me, at least, that this is a supply weather-driven market. That means energy and weather are going to be the big drivers. That means the volatility is going to be and remain historically high. And then you throw on top of that Greg's issue of Ukraine. I think you really do want to sell and defend this year, especially at these price levels, and especially if you think you're going to get planted by mid-May. And mid-May, I know, is right around the corner, but I heard a story from a client in Owensboro, Kentucky, this week that large producers down by Fort Campbell were, you know, putting in 8,000-9,000 acres in a 24-hour time period because of the equipment. We are amazing at what we can do if we're given a chance.
Ellen Dearden, where should farmers be on their new crop corn sales?
On new crop corn, a strong third, probably a strong third, maybe even a little more than that on the beans. I'm still fearful that we're going to see some guys want to do some more switching into beans, even if corn economically in Illinois looks like the better crop to grow.
I'm going to answer the question a little differently. You said, where should they be? Let's start with, where are they? I went back and looked. Our farmers are 88% sold on old crop corn, and they're all kicking themselves for having sold too soon. And so they've told me they're not going to make the same mistake on new crop, and they're following up on that. We are 17%. Farmers are 17% sold of expected production on new crop corn. So it's completely reversed, and so far, they've been right to hold on, but as Mike said, at some point in time, you do want to sell. And so, you know, when exactly is that point, we'll find out. But farmers to this point are historically undersold after having sold in their minds too soon, too quickly last year.
Ellen Dearden, you mentioned that producers across the Midwest, even in Illinois, are thinking about this late planting season, and particularly maybe that they might want to shift some of those acres back towards soybeans. Thursday, I asked the Farm Doc team, Gary Schnicki in particular, about an article he had written in mid-April and whether it was still good to run again during the closing market report related to the price of corn and soybeans and which crop to put in the ground all the way through June 10th, and he says this is still good today. Corn makes about $100 more an acre as when you get to that late May, June 10 timeframe, $200 an acre earlier in that timeframe. Producers, though, tend to work a little differently. How many acres do you think might shift?
Oh, Todd, I really don't know. I don't have a good feeling, but I think Gary is right spot on, but the situation is that a lot of guys do not have the inputs on and don't have the inputs on farm. And that has people a little bit nervous on the corn side. So I think that that probably will see push some guys into a few more bean acres.
Mike Zuzulo, I know you're well to the south of this, but you're closer to the Dakotas than we are. And I'm wondering about another article that was written, this one for Thursday of this week, by the FarmDoc team, discussing the potential issues related to prevent plant. And it was a policy sort of function, but it sure looks like soybeans could pay pretty well given the northern area of the United States and the prevent plant dates. Will farmers say they are going to put soybeans in and then just take prevent plant?
You know, I think that's probably unlikely at this point, Todd. I mean, I doubt that many producers realize. I think that price on the soybeans was something like $17.77, if I remember right, on the prevent price. I doubt that many producers really know it's that high right now. In that area of the country, from what I'm picking up, when it comes to the delays, the wet weather that is really starting to hit the northern plains in a serious way is what will push them to plant past prevent plant and take a penalty, essentially, by doing that, is whether they think the cash basis can compensate for that, whether the Pacific Northwest will be able to offload and take on crops and get them off to the export market. And so that has been, in my opinion, a big driver as to what has moved producers, both in terms of what they've actually physically planted. I have heard a lot of specialty crops being contracts being written in that area, South Dakota, North Dakota, and parts of Minnesota this year. That would solidify the idea that they're probably not going to take prevent plant because these specialty crops have some pretty neat triggers in them if you get the crops in and you have a pretty good premium. So my sense is that's going to be the very last resort at this point, unless basis falls apart or they don't see a good basis off the Pacific Northwest.
Well, now that you've dropped that $17.71 number, everybody's going to want to take a look at that article. So I
and that's
tell them
why
how.
I did it. Exactly. I want that Carl. I want Carl's article to just go viral at this point.
Yeah. So this is by Carl Zuloff and the rest of the FarmDoc team. Yeah. The short title is Prevent Plant, a Looming Issue. There's some other things that are in that title, but you can see that it's on Thursday of this week, so up on May the 5th at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Greg Johnson or Ellen Dearden, anything to add about the prevent plant? Maybe Ellen, I'll start with you.
I want to come back around from a comment that Mike made there about the basis for this new crop stuff. And if the beans coming out of the Dakotas have to go west by rail to the ports, which has been the case, when are we ever going to get this rail market problem settled? I mean, we just don't have the locomotives to move these cars. We have grain cars. We have cars available, but we don't have the locomotives to push or pull. So when's that going to, maybe that's a Greg Johnson comment and question to, address.
I think probably it is, Greg, and it's not about the availability of the engines, but of the engineers, correct?
Yeah, it's a labor shortage, just like everything else, and we've experienced that all year, and they're telling us not to expect it to get any better until 2023. So we're going to have to get through this fall the same way that we've been the last 7-8 months, and that's not a very good situation, and Ellen hit it right on the head. The futures price may be $7-$8, but if your basis is 50 under, or in the Dakota's case, a dollar under, that cash, the farmers get paid on cash prices, not futures prices. And so that will influence their decision. If they don't think the basis is going to be very strong, there's a little bit more incentive for them to plant something that the basis is going to be better in or take prevent plant.
Right now, the bean basis in the Dakotas, though, is strong right now for fall delivery.
Yeah, that's right.
It's been that way since last summer sometime, correct? If I remember right. I talked to Frayne Olson fairly often. I Yeah.
They've had short crops on the veg oils especially, that's for sure.
And California is driving part of that, and there's also the push for, and I say California is driving part of that because the push there is for renewable diesel and to feed plants that are being built or are already operational in North Dakota and shipping, I think, by rail to California so that the refiners there can use some of the soybeans and other vegetable oils to create renewable diesel too. Speaking of which, how much of a play is renewable diesel, do you think, Ellen, in the marketplace?
I think that a discussion has cooled over the last several weeks' time. However, I think it's underlying support to this market. I mean, shoot, we made all-time highs in the bean oil in the last several weeks, so it can't be anything but very supportive.
You know, I agree with that. I think, though, much, and this kind of weaves into the demand issue and what's happening with China some, is that we are hitting a wall now, I think, with the COVID lockdowns and with the supply chains. And what I mean by that is there are some serious issues happening on the demand side. Ports are, you're getting ships into the ports, you know, off of Shanghai compared to what we maybe didn't, weren't being able to do the last couple, 3 months. But getting trucks and getting, you know, the containers moved out of the ports. And these are issues that are starting to really make a true impact on the marketplace. And some hard data is coming out where a poll was done by the Nikkei newspaper, and 63% of Japanese companies with factories in Shanghai have suggested, have now, excuse me, suspended operations. Yum China, the KFC, Pizza Hut, in China, Shanghai's their headquarters. It's their most important market. It's literally 30 to 40% of their overall sales. And their January to March net profits were down 57%. They expect it to be actually worse next quarter. And this just goes all the way down into the food chain in terms of the meats. And, you know, I think Rabobank has put out some numbers that pork imports heading into China could jump drop as much as 30% this year because of logistics. And so the energies can be a supportive feature because of tight supplies, but they can also be a negative feature because of the demand side of the equation reacting to that. And I think that's where we're at in the supply chains and the energies, and it's going to be very hard to navigate. It's not going to be as clear as it has been the last 6 months.
Well, let's stay with this just a little bit because we have the price of crude oil over $108, $110 a barrel again. The U.S. dollar is really high priced at this point. And Mike, I want to stay with you for just a second on this. In this kind of macro area, how do all of these things play? You talked about part of it, but the dollar really is very strong.
Yeah, and this is the key, is that if you're at a 20-year high in the dollar, the USDA just came out with fresh meat data today, and they came in with beef exports versus March of 2022, only up about 1%. They had came in with pork exports down 25% for the month of March versus March 2021, and broilers were down 1%. And yet our imports, our hog imports, are up 5% versus a year ago, and our beef and veal imports are up almost 30%. And so this is where it goes back to that strong dollar is doing its job. The reason the crude oil is so strong is because natural gas is so strong. Natural gas has gone from 583 for a high in March up to 880. It's at the August 2008 levels, Todd. That's because of what's happening on the supply side with Europe and them shutting down Russia. So that gives you a boon in the early days in the supply side. And you got to go find substitutes, but eventually that demand does get destroyed.
Okay, Ellen Dearden, can you put some of this into perspective as maybe it relates to livestock? And I don't know whether the poultry and pork segments are much different than the beef, but I feel like they might be.
I think right now the beef sector is not different than pork and poultry. We've got declining numbers in the U.S. It's cheaper to import stuff with a strong dollar. It's the poultry market has just been in a wreck, and it's not just meat, but also looking at eggs. I noticed typically I think dollar eggs, dollar a dozen plus 20 cents sometimes. Now eggs are more than twice that, in the local grocery store. So we're seeing people back away from meat. The alternate at eggs isn't a cheap alternate. So I think we've got all the meats kind of in a contracting segment, and it's going to be a difficult time digging out from that.
So Greg Johnson, taking all of that into perspective and thinking about your elevator there in Champaign County that services the southeastern market for livestock, do you see a dwindling feed pull from that area?
We haven't seen it yet, but if this plays out the way that we're kind of laying it out right now, yes, you would expect less feeders, less hogs, less chickens, and so that's less demand. So the question is that going to be offset by export demand from other countries that typically buy from Ukraine, that typically buy from Brazil? Their second crop of corn started off great, but is starting to turn dry, so we could have a short crop there. U.S. acres are down from what we intended or what the market thought we were going to get, and we haven't even got into the weather yet. So there's still a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknowns, but you're right. I mean, the livestock part of the equation, that demand part of the equation probably needs to be ratcheted down. So, the question is, can that be offset by either increased ethanol or increased exports? Those are your three big demand factors for corn.
Do you think it can be?
I think it can be in the short run. I think with inflation and with funds and with all the uncertainty, I think that we've got 2 months between now and the 4th of July to see how high this thing wants to go. But, we all know that if we have a decent crop, corn does not need to be $8. If we have a drought this summer, obviously it can go higher. But if we don't, we can be back down to $6. And so the market doesn't know. And that's why we're hanging around in the sevens. It can go $1, $1.50 either way, and I wish I knew which way but it's probably going to move $1.50 one way or the other.
I think it's been amazing that ethanol has stayed as strong. Corn demand for ethanol production has remained as strong as it is with $8 corn. Certainly we're getting products off the other side of things. Is the corn oil demand super strong? Is that what's pulling that, corn processing margins up? I don't know, but certainly the bean processing margins are just outstanding. So I don't think it's going to be exports that are the big boon. It's going to come from the processing side.
The only thing I'd add to that, Todd, is I like the way Greg laid out the timeline because of the fact that I think the week from today, when we see the WASDE report, we should be launching that next move up if we're going to have it, even in the face of this 20-year high in the dollar. As you say, the crude oil is moving, the natural gas is moving. You've got some things on your side in the outside markets. Does USDA come in and support what Greg was talking about on the Brazilian crop? Because they raised the Brazilian corn production number last month, and I think they went the wrong direction. And then you have the wheat. You have the wheat supply-demand fundamentals that have changed dramatically this week in India and in Europe, specifically France, the biggest producing country in that region. And then you have the U.S. crop. At the good to excellent ratings we have, a 49-bushel national yield does not make any sense. Even in states like Illinois, the good to excellent is well below where it was last year at this time. So are we like 2008 still or not? And in 2008, we made the high in hard red wheat in March. We made the Deese 2008 corn high in the later part of June, just under $8.
So we have two topics to take up yet. Ukraine is one of them, and next week's USDA report. Let's start with that USDA report, since, Mike, you mentioned it. Ellen Dearden, what are your expectations for the new crop of corn and soybeans when that report is released?
I don't think that USDA will make many changes on their yield projection, even though they always talk about planting dates very important for their yield projections. So I think they're going to come in with a large crop. They're going to use that 181 bushel corn yield. And I think that we will just see a large supply on that report, both for corn and beans.
The USDA Ag Outlook Forum projected a 1.9 billion bushel corn carryout I think it's going to be closer to 1.3 when USDA comes out with their numbers next week. For soybeans, the forum was at 305 million. I think that could be 75 to 100 million bushels too high. I think the stocks numbers are extremely tight, and until we get a little bit more certainty about acres and yield, I think the uncertainty keeps the market supported for the next 45 to 60 days.
I just want to see what USDA has to say about the supply-demand fundamentals, not other than what I've already said when it comes to the Eastern European countries, because I still don't feel like we've got a very good beat on that yet.
Greg Johnson, you said Ukraine has still a story to write in the marketplace. Is that simply because we don't know how much they'll be able to harvest and or move?
Exactly. I always convert metric tons into bushels. My mind thinks in terms of bushels. And so Ukraine is the fifth largest corn producer at 1.6 billion bushels. Compare that to the U.S. at about 15 billion bushels. And, you know, you can hear any number as far as how much they're going to get planted, anywhere from 0 to 100%. But I've been using 60%, and I may be wrong. I just, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. And so if they get 60% of that corn planted, that's a shortfall of 600 million bushels. And so if you take that and divide that by the 15 or by the 90 million acres that we should maybe will plant here in the U.S., we would have to increase the U.S. yield by 7 bushels an acre to make up for that 600 million drop off. Now, obviously, we don't have to make all that up. We'll have some demand reduction because of livestock and what have you. But that just kind of gives you a perspective of how much of an impact that Ukraine shortfall could be if, in fact, they only get 60% of their land planted.
The big news to me this week was they formally closed their seaports that were captured by Russia because they know they can't get anything in or out. And it is essentially going to be Russian grain if they let it get into those areas. And I was astounded that the trade didn't seem to care at all about that, Todd. That to me is so much more important than the planting progress that they're getting done over there, because you can plant all you want, but if it's captive, it's not going anywhere. And they are saying they're going to work harder on getting more out by rail. But that is extremely tough when you have such different gauges and you're moving from one country to another to get, you know, things ultimately to a third destination. So, I just don't think that supply chain issue is going to work very well for them, unfortunately, because it looks like Russia's going to have more control of the Black Sea than it did when it came in 2014 into Crimea.
I would certainly agree with Mike that Ukraine's not going to be able to ship out much. They keep trying to put out numbers that they're shipping by rail, but they're just piddly. So it's going to take a long time. And even if this war were to end this summer, how long until the ports could be cleared? You know, let's just say Ukraine wins this war this summer. It would take months beyond that. So we're already talking about a write-off on the 22 crop. Is that a write-off then on moving corn out or beans out for the 23 crop? Maybe.
Let's wrap up now. I'll get a final word from each of you. Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Your final word, please.
I think there's more uncertainty in the corn market right now than there is in the bean market. The bean crop in South America is harvested. We're supposed to plant more acres here in the U.S. We only have to ration a crop for 6 months in beans instead of a whole year for corn. So with all those greater uncertainties in corn, I just think there's a little bit more room to hang on to corn until we have a few more answers or a few more questions answered in the next 45 to 60 days. So I think we can afford to be patient on corn until we get some more numbers. But beans, I'm not going to talk anybody out of selling beans, you know, at these kind of levels.
Ellen Dearden of AgReview, your final word.
I'm really watching this wheat crop, and I would agree with Mike that there's too many areas that have crop production problems. I watched the technicals. Wheat puts in a 7 and 13 week cycle lows. That should have come this week, and it's right on target to see some upside. Look for a potential head and shoulders bottom on this July wheat.
And Mike Suzula, GlobalCommResearch.com.
Well, kind of dovetailing right into that, Todd, I've been real leery of wanting to sell too much before the May report because of corn and wheat. and the supply-demand fundamentals, especially with the South American crop, as Greg pointed out. But I still am on track for a 2008 type market with the weather looking to be improving. So that means the first half of this calendar year, I think, is going to be your best opportunities to lock in really good profit and maybe not have to be as nervous about whipsides to the downside and whipsaw moves to the downside that force you into selling big waves down. And that's the worst feeling in the world, especially if those prices come back on you after you've made those sales. So as I said earlier, I like the sell and defend model, known cost option verticals that are $2 apart in terms of corn options. I think those are a nice position for most people.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can hear that on willag.org, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Greg Johnson from TGM in Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Suzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.